Well, hey, what's going on? Happy Tuesday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube from very late on Monday night. Actually, I think it was Tuesday morning when we went live. But first, let's recap the game. Reds come into Seattle 9-6, taking on the 6-10 Mariners. The Mariners are a team that has won 88 games or more each of the last three seasons. In the bottom of the first, Frankie Montas walked the first two batters that he faced. Then he gave up a three-run home run to Jorge Polanco. Just like that, Reds in a 3-0 hole. Montas' pitch count actually got up to 33 pitches before he got the first out of the inning. Nick Martinez actually had to get up and warming in the inning, but a double play helped Montas get out of the inning without allowing any more runs, but it took 45 pitches. Top of the second, Jamer Candelario crushed a solo home run to center field that made it 3-1. Frankie Montas was able to go 1-2-3 in the bottom of the second, but then he gave up another walk and then a homer, and it was 5-1 Mariners. Montas' day would be done after just two innings, giving up three hits, five earned runs, five walks, one strikeout, and the two home runs allowed. The Reds would cut it to 5-2 on doubles from Christian Encarnacion Strand and Jake Fraley. Nick Martinez gave the Reds four really strong innings of relief, but Buck Farmer gave up three runs in the seventh inning to pretty much put this one out of reach. Christian Encarnacion Strand had a nice day. He went 2-for-4 with a pair of doubles. Jake Fraley hit his first home run of the year, actually coming off a left-handed pitcher, but the Reds eventually fall 9-3 to the Mariners. Reds now 9-7 on the season. Here was Frankie Montas after the game talking about his tough start in Seattle.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, my arm is good. You know, one of those days that, you know, you don't have your best stuff working for you. I was trying to go as long as I could, to be honest with you, which I had to talk with David Bell about it. You know, it was like, you know, I was trying to give you a shot, you know, to go to as long as you can on there, which I do appreciate that, you know, I'm the type of guy that it doesn't matter how the day started for me. You know, I always trying to go as long as I can and trying to, you know, get something positive out of something that didn't start the way I wanted to, you know. But, you know, today wasn't my day. Just got to put that on the pass, flip the page, and, you know, continue working and get ready for the next time to give me the ball.
And here's Reds manager David Bell.
This team over there, I mean, I've watched them enough, we've scouted them enough to know this is a really good team. And, you know, nothing surprises me. We expect their very best, and there's a lot of good players over there. So, you know, they did their job tonight for sure. You know, and like you said, we're patient, but we're also ready to hit. So, and that's what good hitters do, and that's who they have over there.
All right, our deep drive of the game was, of course, Jamer Candelario's solo home run, 105.3 off the bat, going 415 feet to center field off of George Kirby, a guy that doesn't allow a lot of home runs. And our deep drive of the game, sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks as always to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores from around the NL Central. Reds did get a little bit of help on Monday night. Brewers fell 7-3 to the Padres. Pirates fell 6-3 to the Mets. Cubs did beat the Diamondbacks 3-2 in 11 innings. And the Cardinals beat the lowly Oakland A's 3-1. So the Brewers sit at 10-5, Pirates 11-6, Cubs 10-6, Reds 9-7, Cardinals 8-9. And if you are wondering this early in the year, currently four NL Central teams would be in the playoffs if they started today, the Reds holding the final NL wildcard spot. All right, well, here's myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube.
All right, Nick, losing edition, a late night losing edition at that of Chatterbox Reds. Reds fall 9-3 based off your graphic. For those that don't know, you know, I had some what we'll call technical malfunctions here. And I was watching the game 15 minutes behind what seems like maybe the last, you know, back half of this baseball game. And I was late to the show. I was late to the show, but I wasn't asleep. Nick was saying I was asleep. I wasn't asleep, Nick. I did get to see all of it, although I didn't get to see the last inning. And it appears thankful that I did it. There's a couple things that are happening right now. One is I am realizing very quickly that you probably should not eat ice cream without having water around and try to do a show. It's a bad combination. Just going to throw that out there right off the rip. The second thing that's bad is when you want to play a baseball game and you want to try to win baseball games, you don't throw strikes. That's the moral of the story. I think that's the story of this entire game, summed up in about 10 seconds, Nick. There's obviously more things that have happened that we'll get into. Certainly good for Candy. Good for Nick Martinez. Thought he came in and threw the ball relatively well. I'm sure we'll get into maybe Fraley kind of having a little bit of a homecoming. Kudos to him. But first thing on the rundown, walks will haunt. And that's an absolute fact, and they certainly did tonight.
Yeah, Montas, only one of his 12 splitters he was able to throw for a strike. That was, I think, the one pitch that he probably had the worst command on. Just one of those days, you know, where can't throw a strike. Montas been pretty good. Two of his three starts, he had the first start, he didn't walk a single batter. Second start, he did walk three against the Phillies, but the last start, he only walked one. And then tonight, just really had it. He had a lot of two-strike counts, too.
Oh, he got ahead. He was getting ahead in the first inning. Like, I'm not going to blame all Tyler. Listen, you call the pitch. The pitcher should execute the pitch. But that's like, I don't know how many 1-2, 2-2, 3-2 splitters that Tyler just kept asking for him to throw. And I know that that's probably his out pitch. It's just something. It felt like tonight, like, you could just tell he did not have command of those secondary pitches. And it's like, and he did groove one fastball, and it got hit. So I can't blame Tyler for everything, but it was disappointing that he got ahead and he just couldn't find a way to throw strikes and finish guys off, man.
Yeah, it is what it is. It really sucks to walk a team that came in as bad offensively as the Mariners were. You really kind of just let them settle in and get comfortable. You don't want to make too much of a guy that just struggles with command that doesn't typically struggle with command, but it was definitely just a brutal watch tonight, and you hate that you kind of let the Mariners feel good about themselves offensively for a rare time this season.
Yeah, he did, and Yash had something funny to say. He said Montas ought to get a dog if he likes to walk this much, which made me giggle before the show started. You get this late in the night, and you're going to have some folks out here on edge. So, you know, ultimately, I hate to continue to be like, it's not a big deal when the Reds lose, but at least tonight you felt like you lost, you know? You felt like you had no business deserving to win that game. It would have been disgusting to try to take a positive spin on this a little bit. If I'm sitting up at 12:21 at night, the Reds dominated this baseball game, and they found a way to blow it or lose towards the end of the game. That would have been disheartening. But you know what the good news is that for those that are looking to get to bed early, they allowed them to get to bed early if they were planning on trying to stay up and watch it, because you hang around for the first inning, and that's probably all you needed to see. But you know what? Unique thing, and we'll get to Candy Crush right now. The unique thing was that they were down just 3-1 there, and you felt like maybe Montas was going to get himself a chance to bounce back. Candelario hits a home run, kind of gives them a little bit of life, per se, kind of breaks up that momentum that the Mariners had built up. And then Montas gives it right back. But good for Candy. I don't really know if he's seeing the ball significantly better yet. Like, it doesn't feel like a CES-type situation. Speaking of CES, man, I don't know. I'm sure he's on the back half of this rundown. You want to talk about a guy that's seeing the ball pretty well. What an incredible play by, was it Polanco? Up the middle, I think it was. But anyways, whoever it was, he got a hit robbed from him. But anything to add from Candy's standpoint, outside obviously the home run?
That ball was absolutely crushed. That was, you know, Jamer Candelario, you kind of think most of his home runs are going to be, you know, more of the GABP specials, and he's going to capitalize on that. But he really got that one. Good to see him. I agree. It doesn't feel like CES where it's a big breakout, but nonetheless, that was a home run off a really, really good pitcher, a pitcher that doesn't allow a lot of home runs either. Yeah, good to see for Candelario. Hopefully that's a big positive for him that he can take going forward, because the Reds really need him.
They definitely need him. The corner spots have been disappointing, right? CES and Candy have been disappointing. You'd like to think, though, that these averages or whatever you want to call it, I know people get tired of us always saying this, perhaps, but if you do 162 of these shows, you're going to say it from time to time. Water's going to find its level, back of the baseball card, cliche, 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 I get it. But listen, Candy and CES, they got to come back at some point. Looks like CES is turning that corner right now. Candy, he's gonna turn the corner as well. It's just a matter of when. Hopefully it's relatively soon and we can kind of get the ball rolling, because I don't know how sustainable Steer is. I'm not even trying to downplay him, but we all know. I mean, it seems inevitable at some point Steer's going to come back down to earth, and that's okay. That's more than fine.
Go ahead. You just hope that, you know, you have guys that kind of stack. And that's what happened last year a lot for this team.
Yeah.
Up until the last month when kind of everyone got cold at the same time. You know, you have two or three guys that are hot at once, and then you pass the baton, and that's really how a good offense works. So hopefully it's Candy and CES and maybe Jake Fraley's turn, you know, taken from Steer and Ellie, and you keep cycling through, and that's what gets you through a season of competitive and hopefully, you know, winning baseball.
A bigger storyline in this game, in my opinion, is what we were going to talk about next. And you got Martinez, who came in the game, and we had talked about this before about, you know, what do you do with that starting rotation? Martinez has kind of showcased his ability to be a starter. You can't really kick him out because of his lack of production. Tonight's an excellent night, though, of really, he saved them from just being in a world of hurt the next few days. Because otherwise, they were going to probably have to blow through a significant, you know, I don't want to say significant, but they were going to have to blow through two or three guys tonight that you probably would like to use maybe one other time throughout the series. And that wasn't the case. Martinez kind of, he took the bulk of it, and then they threw Buck Farmer to the Wolves, as they rightfully should have. I know that there was someone on X that wasn't really pleased with David Bell bringing Farmer in, but they're down by three. Like, at some point, you got to be realistic. The chances of you coming back down by three with nine outs left it's already not very good. And then you know what? You never know. Farmer might accidentally throw a couple scoreless innings. It's not like he's guaranteed to give up runs. He's done it in the past. But you'd like to think that Farmer's on his last leg at this point. I don't know how many more times that this is going to continue to happen before you just say, you know what? He's probably not a big leaguer. But I don't know. Santillan's got to be close, right?
I think Farmer had thrown four straight games without allowing a run coming into today. It's one of those spots where, I don't know, you can make a big deal about it. Like you said, you have to. That's Buck Farmer's spot. I think the Reds' win probability was like 5% when he came in.
Right.
So you're not going to waste. I wouldn't even waste like Brent Suter in a spot like that.
No.
That's the spot for Buck Farmer. I don't think we need to overreact to that, but I think Farmer's maybe on a yellow in terms of the, if we have a green, yellow, right, red for your DFA traffic light, I'd say he's maybe on a yellow. I don't think he's at a red yet. I think I'd like to see a little bit more. I don't want to overreact this early in the season. Farmer's a guy that's been available. He's been a guy that David Bell can throw back-to-back games, 3-4 days in a row sometimes. He's the guy that you can really give the crappy assignments to. And you have to have that guy in your bullpen so you don't wear out the guys that you really trust on. So I'm not giving up on him yet, but I'm also not going to say, you know, he's for sure going to, you know, make it through the full season, because at this point, it's maybe a roll of the dice. But also, you could also see Buck Farmer, you know, end up on the IL tomorrow, and it wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly seems like they always find a way, don't they? Somebody's going to find a way to be on the IL. I don't know what it'll be from, but it'll be something. Game time. Let's talk about that for a second. Ticket app. You've heard me say this time and time and time again. Listen, folks, if you're not on board yet, I don't know what else I got to do to get you on board. Okay, just download the app and use the code Cincy, CINCY. You get $20 off. I think you get like 100 and... This is where there's asterisks involved here. Don't hold me to this. You get a pretty sizable amount of time to be able to use the code too. It's not like you have to use the code right then and there. Just go on there, download the Game Time app, use the code Cincy, use it to your advantage when the time is right. When you're like, you know what, I need a ticket. Go to the Game Time app, two clicks, all in pricing, and you get $20 off.
What more can I do? That's about it. All right, that's the Game Time app.
Hire Bell from RD711. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Fire him. Get him out of here. I mean, I love this chat. I love it. I mean, what the hell? How am I supposed to come back from a Fire Bell after tonight? I mean, what do you want me to do? I can't even defend it.
I don't know. We talked about Farmer. I guess maybe that was contentious to some. I'll never think you should use a good reliever when your win probability is below 5%. I guess the other thing, maybe what that chat was talking about, I saw some other people that were upset that didn't pull Montas after the first inning. I think maybe more so because of the risk of injury to him. But I almost wonder, and I don't know this. I don't have a good answer to this. I almost wonder, a guy like Frankie that's getting built back up, if him not throwing a certain number of pitches could risk an injury. Like he only threw the 45, but like if they pulled him right there, like that was what actually made me nervous, because I think David Bell has said before that he has like a hard pitch count of 45 pitches per inning, and that's like if a pitcher gets past that, right, he's not going to let them go. And he ended up exactly at 45. I was watching, I was thinking about that in the back of my head, and he got through. But I was almost concerned if he would have gone past that, like, would that have messed him up because he only maybe threw like 50 pitches or something, and then that was it? Like, if he didn't come back out and work a little bit more, could that like hurt his progression? I don't really know the answer to that, though. But that was kind of a concern to me.
I don't think that there's an exact science to all this, if we're being honest. I hate that there aren't perfect answers for this, but you know, we live in a world that sometimes things happen that we can't explain, and certainly you can give some justification as to why we have all these arm injuries, and I don't think it's all that complicated as to figure out why. I mean, guys are literally training differently than they've ever have in the past. They are focused solely on velo, and rightfully so. I'm not suggesting why. I don't get why they're doing that. The idea that if you throw this many pitches versus that many pitches, or you don't throw enough pitches here, that it will lead to something. I think it's such a micro look at it that it's hard to really give a good, I mean, it could be, but it very well might be nothing as well. Right. I don't know. I don't make too much of the Montas thing. I think, you know, for lack of a better term, he just didn't have his stuff tonight. The most disappointing thing, I guess, at the end of it all was just, I felt like he wasn't challenging guys. It just felt like we were kind of trying to be perfect, and maybe that's just lack of command. So I don't want to sit here and suggest he wasn't trying to, you know, throw the ball over the plate and let guys hit it, but it just felt like we were trying to throw split fingers, and we were throwing cutters, and we were doing all this stuff when it's just like, just throw a fastball, you know, over the plate and see what happens. I mean, at this point, I'd rather a guy hit a home run, which is stupid as that sounds, than to sit here and watch you walk two guys and throw 40 pitches. So, you know, it's always easier said, hindsight. So I'm not overly concerned. I think some people are suggesting that he's hurt. I'm not going there. I'm not going there. I mean, it's just a bad outing. And let's face it, the first two, his first start specifically, maybe his first two starts off the top of my head, I can't even remember his second start now, but, in his first start, especially, it wasn't against world beaters, you know, let's just pump the brakes here and not act like the world's falling apart just because a guy didn't have control.
Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe how good he looked in the first couple starts, maybe it masks some of the rust that you would normally just expect from a guy that missed an entire season last year. But walks have never really been an issue for him, at least. You know, 2021, he walked 2.7 batters per nine. 2022, he walked 2.7 batters per nine. I mean, that's really good walk rate. So I think tonight's just probably more of a blip on the radar. Overall, tonight just felt like a game of regression on both sides.
Right.
My cousin George, like, he was due for a good game. You could look at any stat and, you know, like, his field of independent pitching was like a 2.5, and he had an ERA of 8. That's going to go the other way. You see it coming. And Frankie was the other way. Frankie had pitched really well, but he probably shouldn't have been that great through his first four starts after missing a full year.
Right.
It swings back and forth. That's the game of baseball.
A couple quick things I see in the chat that are relatively intelligent. RD711 with the super chat just a moment ago, but he also says Montas was missing every pitch. Polanco got him right in the count, and he made him pay for it. He did. I mean, Polanco was looking for the exact pitch that he got, and it was largely based off the fact that he knew that Montas couldn't locate any other pitch outside of the fastball, and he did make him pay for it, which doesn't always happen. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you throw a fastball, a guy knows a fastball's coming, and they miss it. So you got to give some credit to the Mariners. They made him pay. Polanco made him pay. It was a big hit, and kudos to them. Sean also says, what's the logic on pulling Martinez at 56 pitches? He threw 92 on April 6th, 8 days rest. He was acquired to be a starter and a long reliever, one run through four frames. The only thing I can think of to say to that would be there might be a ramp-up phase for him to be in the bullpen as well. Like, it's just a different warm-up situation when you are a starter versus a reliever, and you know you're starting the game, you get a chance to long toss, you get a chance to just stretch for a significant amount of time. I'm not saying that's 100% the answer, but I am saying that that could be what it is. You know, he was never expecting to come into the game as quickly as he did. So he probably had to start getting up and getting ready pretty considerably quick. And 56 pitches is still a considerable amount. It's not like it's nothing. So I don't know. I mean, that's a fair question to ask in the post-game press conference, but that's the best answer I can give just by trying to read between the lines.
Yeah, and I think it's probably more you just don't want to push him in his first game as a reliever. He got you four innings. I don't think you're really ever wanting more than that out of Nick Martinez in this current role. And they only had to use one more pitcher the rest of the way. So, and again, when Buck Farmer came in, you can make a case that saving Nick Martinez is actually probably better because of where your chance of winning the game, not extending him and making him unavailable for 4 days instead of maybe unavailable for 2 days now, right?
Right.
I think this is a fair
question about managing. I think that it's okay to punt sometimes in baseball games. Like I know people probably hate me for saying that, but I think that there are situations where you realize that you're in a really tough spot. You're probably not going to win. You punt. You try to set yourself up for the next few days, so you don't try to burn something that would ultimately not allow you to win a day or 2 days from now, and you still don't win the night that you burn the guys, because as you mentioned before, you got like a 5-10% chance to come back and win, not just based off analytics, but if you watch this game, really at no point did you think to yourself like, wow, things are really probably going to break through for the Reds at some point. I have no problem with him punting a little bit on a night like tonight.
Yeah, I 100% support punting in games like that. It's a long, long season. And again, you harken back to last September where the Reds bullpen was when they ran out of gas. You don't want that to happen this year. There's higher expectations this year. You've got to be mindful of that. The Reds do have more depth built in than they had last year. So I hope that being a little more careful plus the added depth is a great combination that will protect the Reds deeper into the year. But it's definitely something to be mindful of really all season.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, there's two sides to this argument. RD's already saying that it was a 6-3 game. It was a 6-3 game. But that's 100% more runs than the other team. Like, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's 6-3 is not like, it's not like 2-1. It's not, I don't know. Maybe I'm being overly pessimistic about it. Tonight didn't feel like the night to where you're like, you know what, let's push the envelope a little bit. Let's see if we can't make a run at this thing. Because ultimately, the other side of the thing that no one wants to discuss either, but you know, they just traveled from Chicago to Seattle the night before. Let's pack it up. Let's get ready for tomorrow. Let's find a way to win tomorrow. How about that?
Yeah, and the back end of the Mariners bullpen's very good. Like their closer Munoz, he's nasty. Like your chances of maybe there's some more situations where you're facing a team like the Nationals and the three-run comebacks may be a little bit more possible. Your chance of coming back against a really good back end of the bullpen, just it's really slim.
Right. I don't think they gave up too early either, to be clear. Like, I don't... I just don't. I don't think they gave up too early. And let's also say this. Like, I don't think it's giving up just because you bring in Buck Farmer. Like, Buck Farmer's capable of getting guys out. I mean, it ain't like they threw me or you out there, to be fair. I mean, you know, I don't know. Just trying to be fair. CES and Fraley, let's get to them really quickly because I think we have some other fun stuff on the rundown. And then obviously we have to get this podcast out relatively soon. So the folks that wake up early will have what they always desire, which is a podcast in the morning. CES, I think he looks great. He's starting to look much, much better at the plate. Confident. I'm so thankful that he's kind of been able to get on base the last few games to build on that confidence. And he did get robbed of a hit. Last thing I'll add on this rundown here before I throw it over to you for these two guys, Fraley, you know, hey, he's going to be a good hitter. Lefty on lefty, by the way. I think lefty on lefty, he got a big fly, so kudos to him on that. He did get a little fortunate, though. He got a little check swing, whatever you want to call it, incredibly lucky hit. For those that didn't get to see the game, he basically took a check swing, ball hits his bat, flares out into kind of like short left field, and I don't even think Fraley realized that it was a hit until it was halfway into the outfield. So, but you know what? They say they always add up or they always even out, right, Nick? So kudos to Fraley on what looks like a great night in the box score.
Yeah, Fraley home run number 3 in his career against the lefty. 1 point rolling back, Buck Farmer had a 2.35 ERA coming into today's game. So really, I get to your point of punting, I don't know. CES, we said on Sunday's show, great to see CES have some good at-bats against bad pitchers. Let's see how he does against the Mariners. Both of the doubles he hit were against George Kirby, one of the top pitchers in baseball. I think he's a top 30 pitcher, probably. So really good to see a guy that doesn't walk anyone either. I guess that's probably good for CES, right? There's no chance of getting walked. So that's kind of the dream matchup for CES. But no, really good to see him taking good swings off of a quality pitcher for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump into Ellie. You have Ellie to center field. Listen, I obviously put out a post that just suggested that, hey, you see Ellie make the play that he made tonight. He tracked down a ball in the short left field. He basically was shifted over towards the second base bag. Ball was hit down the line a little bit towards left field. He runs it down, makes a great catch. And I think I just put out a post, something along the lines that it's like, you know what? When you see him make plays like that, it does make you scratch your head and at least, I guess, marvel at the idea of how unbelievable he might be in a position like center field where his pure speed, if nothing else, would probably be a little more utilized from time to time than a position like shortstop where you really can't, there's not all that often where you're going to be able to run for a ball like that. Benson wasn't able to make a couple catches tonight that I like in your head, you're like, does Ellie make that play? Probably. I don't know. Like with a little experience, he probably does. But I just want to be clear in saying, I wasn't suggesting for a single second that Ellie should move to center field anytime soon. I was just saying, it does make you wonder that if the Reds were to find themselves in a position where they have what they consider or what they deem to be a major league ready shortstop, would they consider moving Ellie just based off the idea that he has the capability of being elite almost anywhere you put him, quite frankly?
Yeah, this was, you put out that tweet. I got a DM from someone saying, hey, can you talk about this tonight? And I think Sadak and Cowboy also mentioned on the broadcast. So, look, this is going to be something of a topic today. I have several reasons why I think that's a terrible idea. The first one, if you look at like how wins above replacement is calculated, which there's a lot of precision that goes into that calculation, your shortstop has the highest value. Tied with catcher, and it's significantly more than center field. The second point would be center fielders get hurt more than shortstops. If you see it with TJ Friedl making diving catches, plays against the wall, I think you'd risk more of Ellie De La Cruz there. I looked it up last year. The chances, there were 616 chances at shortstop for the Reds last year, 421 in center field. 18 errors were made by Red shortstops last year. three errors were made by center fielder. So I think he's just going to have a lot more action for Ellie De La Cruz. If you don't believe that Ellie De La Cruz can be an above average shortstop like I do, then I understand why you might think that Ellie in center field would be a good move. But I fully believe that he's going to be a good, if not a great, defensive shortstop. So that's why I mean, the last and maybe the most important one is I just don't think you mess with a player like Ellie De La Cruz that's played shortstop or infield all throughout the minor leagues. I think moving him to center field, that's in my opinion, just trying to get way too cute. And it's not even a conversation for me at all right now. Now, if Ellie De La Cruz has two terrible years defensively this year, if you get to the end of the year and Ellie De La Cruz has bad defensive numbers, then I think it's a different conversation. But as a guy who believes in Ellie De La Cruz defensively at shortstop, I think right now it's not even a conversation for me.
The only thing I would push back on that a little bit on would just be like, you don't really know what you have until you have it, and then you got to make a decision based off your personnel. I'm not suggesting for a single second that Ellie's going to move anytime soon. My post was more or less about, really, if anything, complimenting him on how unbelievably gifted he is. And you see him run down a ball like that, your natural instinct is to think, what does that look like in a place or a space that allows him to run like that more often than not? And the only pushback, if I could say that there is anything to what you just said, I'm never going to argue that shortstop isn't the most important defensive position on the field, or maybe catcher like you had mentioned. That is 100% agreeable on. The only thing would be is if you have someone in the system that just so happens to be in your system and it's kind of a luck of the draw, or it's just if Arroyo ends up being a great, great player, and he might not be, right? He might end up being hurt, might end up fizzling out. This is all hyperbole. We're talking about something on a midnight show, 1 o'clock in the morning on, you know, April 16th, 2024. And I'm just saying the hypothetical situation of what I'm talking about probably occurs in 2026, maybe. And that is, maybe Ellie is average or above average shortstop. But you have a guy that's coming up that you think is maybe one of the best shortstops defensively in the history of the franchise or something crazy like that. Well, at that point, you realize, okay, we got to put these pieces where they best fit for our team. Maybe not what best fits for each individual, and that's where maybe Ellie eventually gets moved. I don't know if that'll ever happen. Again, that's a huge speculation. I think that that's about as well put together of a roundtable topic on Ellie going to center field or playing shortstop as we could probably do in 10 minutes. But I do think that that really encompasses the whole situation that is Ellie. I don't think he's going to move. He shouldn't move. And right now, it makes no sense to move him because his backup, his replacement, would be like Espinal or something, which would be, you know, with all due respect to Espinal, of course, not ideal. All right, moving forward here on a late night edition, a losing one of Chatterbox Reds. We have Reds MILB. Nick, what should we look forward to tomorrow?
Yeah, so just got a quick little Reds MILB. Daytona, they'll be starting a series against Bradenton. If you are a minor league MILB TV watcher, Bradenton, one of, I think, the two teams that are on TV. So you can actually watch Tortugas tomorrow at 5:30. Dayton, they're at home all week against Fort Wayne. So if you're in the area, that team's a really fun team to watch. Rhett Lauder should be pitching at some point this week. Chattanooga, they're at Biloxi. I think that's how you say it. I had it memorized for the podcast last year, but I probably screwed it up. And then Louisville's at Iowa. And I don't know, Trace, I might start this on Mondays. Real slides here about the top position players so far in the minors so far. Connor Capel down at Triple A. He's got 6 home runs, OPS over 1,200. Really been the only really good offensive performer at Triple A. Matt Nelson, he's probably been the only good contributor at Double A. It's kind of showing where the Reds are at. Maybe the gap between offensive players between the big leagues and high A. But Matt Nelson, the catching prospect, he has a 423 on base percentage so far, so he's off to a good start. Cam Collier has been off to a great start for his first few games with the Dayton Dragons since getting promoted to start this year, hitting 353. He's already drove in 11 runs, OPS over 900. Hector Rodriguez hitting 364. He's got an OPS over 967. And then Dominic Pitelli, shortstop, the Reds guy, I think in the 7th round last year, He's off to a great start for the Tortugas, hitting .467, two home runs, already stole four bases, OPS over 1,300. And then on the pitching side, Tony Santion, I know he's a guy that a lot of people I saw in our chat calling to come up. He's just been outstanding between spring training and AAA. Julian Aguilar down at AA, he's off to a good start, two ERA through his first nine innings pitched. Zach Maxwell, he's a reliever that I really love. He struck out nine batters in just 3 2/3 innings. Rhett Lauder, of course, off to a great start, an even one ERA through his first nine innings. And then Adam Cerwinski down in Daytona, the lefty. He's got a really fun arm action, really nasty slider. He has not allowed a run in eight innings so far, just one walk and struck out 12.
Yep. That's good. I like that. That's actually really nice, for being honest. I don't know how much work that takes by you, which is probably a significant amount, but I do know this. That was something that I think a lot of people that obviously don't pay attention to the minor leagues a significant amount would enjoy. Just the top guys that have been even if it's just for that week. I don't think that's a bad idea. Keep it rolling. All right. In regards to the Reds, I know that unfortunately they didn't find a way to win tonight, but the good news is they do play tomorrow. You know, and by tomorrow on the East Coast, really today. So Nick, another right-hander.
Yep, Logan Gilbert. He's really good. He already has two starts this season where he's gone seven innings and allowed one earned run. He's also, just like George Kirby, it's crazy. He ranked fourth in walk rate last year, walking just 1.7 batters per nine. So interesting for this Reds team, a team that has, I felt, walked a lot early in the year, has had a lot of really good patient at-bats, didn't walk at all tonight. See if they can maybe get something going against Gilbert. Gilbert is a really good pitcher. His slider is a really nasty, third highest run value among starting pitchers, just behind Clayton Kershaw and John Gray. So the Reds will have their work cut out for him. Reds did actually have some success against him last year. 5 1/3 at Great America Ballpark, gave up seven hits, three earned runs, but he did strike out nine and only walked two. Benson was 2 for 2 with two doubles. Candelario's 1 for 6 with a double in his career. CES 1 for 3. Ellie's 0 for 2. Fraley is 1 for 3. And then, of course, Hunter Green, last start out was a struggle against the Brewers. He gave up six runs over six innings. He's only walked two batters total in his last two starts, so that's a positive. He has been throwing a lot of strikes. He's never faced the Mariners in his career. The only players that he's faced are Polanco. Of course, we saw how good he can be. He's 0 for 3. Rojas is 0 for 3. And then Luis Urias, who typically has, I don't think he's played for the Mariners maybe at all this year, or only once or twice. He actually is 2 for 4 with two home runs against Green. So it'll be interesting to see if Luis Urias, who doesn't typically find his way in the lineup, finds his way in the lineup tomorrow, the former Brewer against Green.
Luckily for us, not a huge sample size there. So hopefully that's just a flash in the pan. He had one good day against Hunter, and that's all she wrote. The other thing to add here really quickly about Hunter that I do like is it seems like he's always, I don't know if analytics or stats would back this up, but it seems like he's thrown the ball pretty well in some big ballparks. You know, we'll find out tomorrow. Hopefully he can kind of get this Reds team back on track. Anything to add here, though, before we head off into what I would call the sunset, but the sun's already set.
Just hope the Reds can find a way to get one of the next two. I'm not going to be, this is a series, you said it, I'm not going to be greedy. This is you're facing three really tough pitchers on the road. The 2010 Reds, really good team, got swept by the Seattle Mariners in Seattle, and that Mariners team wasn't even a very good team back then. So it's a tough place to play out on these West Coast games. Find a way to get one of these next two, keep it moving, then come home and beat up on the Angels.
All right. Last thing here really quickly that I want to add. I know that Zach's asking this. I've seen other people's just pop in there. Listen, we're not doing India yet, okay? We're not going to do India yet. We're all aware of the situation, okay, with Jonathan. We're all aware of it. We're not going to do this yet. We're gonna pump the brakes on Jonathan. And you know what? This sounds really bad. This sounds really bad, but, you know, he's going to get special treatment on this show for a little bit of time, all right?
Hey. India's played great defensively. I can't even I don't even think I can think of more than like two or three plays where I was like, oh, that really, his defense hurt the Reds. So he's been great defensively. I've never been worried about the bat. The bat will come around. He's still got a 352 on base percentage. So even though he's slumping, not getting a lot of hits, he's still finding a way to get on base. He's accepted his role as a leadoff hitter well. This is a very tough series for a guy like Jonathan India, a right-handed bat against really, really good right-handed pitchers. So I think we should have all the patience right now with Jonathan India offensively. And credit to him for doing a good job defensively in a very tough spot for him to start this season.
Nice. Very nice. You said some very nice things about Jonathan India. And I will echo those sentiments as well. So ditto, I think, is the word in the English dictionary that I'd like to use.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Really appreciate all your support. If you like what you're listening to, make sure you subscribe to Chatterbox Reds wherever you listen to this podcast. Also, be sure to subscribe to Chatterbox Sports over on YouTube for Chatterbox Reds Live and all kinds of other great sports content. If you could, leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast. That stuff really does help us out. But most importantly, if you know a Reds fan, make sure they know about Chatterbox Reds so they can join in our little community as we follow the Reds every single day, all season long. Be sure to check out Off the Bench on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Trace Fowler, on a short night of sleep, will be hosting Off the Bench 10 a.m. to noon, Chatterbox Sports on YouTube, covering all kinds of Cincinnati sports and beyond. Also, be sure to check out the Kenner and Kev Show, 3 to 5 p.m., new show on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. It's a simulcast from 1410 Wing AM in Dayton. Really excited to have Justin Kenner and Kev Nash joining the Chatterbox Sports family and partnering with us and bringing their show onto our platform. So be sure to check all that out. Of course, Chatterbox Sports over on YouTube. Links to all that kind of stuff and the Game Time app and everything else is in the episode notes below. We'll hope that you have a fantastic Tuesday. We'll see you about 12:10 a.m. on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. But of course, if you can't stay up, we'll have the podcast for you bright and early on Wednesday morning. We'll talk again soon. Go Reds.